We don't do miniature paint no more. We don't do miniature paint, except for Warhammer 40K, because that's not a miniature paint.
Trapped, what? On the podcast known as Trapped Under Plastic, the podcast that provides conclusive proof that adulthood is unattainable under the U.S. educational system. Well, hey, who wants to be an adult when you can have fun? Know what I'm saying?
Wow. Got him.
Got him.
Boom. Roasted. I don't give any credit to the U.S. educational system by my lack of adulting.
That was all our choice.
Yeah, that's all on me. I could have been born literally anywhere on this planet and be this same way.
John, did you buy anything for Black Friday? Any hobby goodies, any video goodies, any John goodies?
Yes. I bought Magic the Gathering cards. You know what? For like 10 years of my life, starting at the age of 13, this was my kryptonite. It was just like I'd spent every free penny I had on Magic cards.
Wait, so it kills you?
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, metaphorically. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like financially. So I bought some Magic cards that were on Black Friday deal. That was nice. But also, going into Thanksgiving week, Monday morning, I turn on my camera to start recording for the painting footage of the Necron that we'll talk about later. And the touchscreen on my camera just doesn't work no more.
Dead.
Now, the camera still works. I still recorded all the footage with it. It was not a big deal. But you don't really realize, or I didn't realize, how inconvenient it is to do constant tasks of stuff with your camera when you're trying to stay on track for a video when you don't have the touchscreen.
Right, yeah. Luckily, a lot of the buttons have the same image of the function they do as a touchscreen. So if you want to delete a clip, there's like a button for that. It's got a little trash symbol next to it. So mm-hmm. I have a broken screen too, but it's not like my daily driver camera. So I don't know all the ways in which it's annoying for you in your situation. But I've been able to replace most of it with just normal button presses, and it's been okay for the most part.
Yeah, it wasn't.
You got to relearn that shit, right?
Yeah, you have to remember where everything is.
Yeah.
So I had been on and off for the last like year or so looking at the hot new Panasonic GH6, which you got.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so back when that was coming out, you said you're getting one. I'm like, sweet. That means I get to wait 6 to 12 months till you know how to use it. And then I get it.
It's mostly the same. Every single Panasonic camera that comes out, they just get more and more complicated.
No, that's not the direction I needed it to go. But I understand how it works. And like when I work, like use my mom's Canon or something, I'm just like, the fuck foreign language is this? So I know Panasonic's. So it was on sale Black Friday, butthole video.
What? Butthole video?
Yeah, B&H.
You bought from B&H your sworn nemesis?
Yeah, I did.
Oh my gosh.
Because Amazon did the same price. It was like a price match. So it was $500 off this camera. But butthole video also threw in a 64 gig memory card and a bag.
Okay.
And the camera bag is really fucking nice.
Okay, you use it for travel.
Yeah. So, yeah, the hard part is even at $500 off, this thing is still so fucking expensive.
Yeah, dude.
So I'm just like,
well, camera.
Merry Christmas and birthday and and everything to me, I guess.
Yeah, that's yeah.
I don't think I bought some odds and ends stuff. I did this week. I did. Getting the mail, so it felt like it was Black Friday purchases. I bought a couple Switch games, too.
Oh, nice. Oops.
I bought the new Star Ocean game, ooh. And I bought a
Mario Maker?
No, I did not buy a Mario Maker. I buy all, like, really nerdy RPGs.
Okay.
So I bought Tactics Ogre Reborn. So if anyone out there knows the Tactics Ogre series.
It's kind of like anime-ish, like.
So it's a
RPG?
It's a tactics strategy game. So the games, it's an RPG, but you control either a whole army or a whole big squad. Of like you can have 50 dudes,
okay,
and you pick how many go to the battles, and so the battles are all done on a big grid.
Mm.
And so everyone's got their abilities. There's certain kind of weapons you have to deal with, like terrain and all this kind of stuff. So it's like much more strategic. And once you get to the fighting in a RPG strategy game. And these were like my jam when I was a kid. I loved them. And maybe there's a connection there I never realized to like tabletop games.
Maybe?
It basically is.
That sounds like a virtual tabletop art game.
100% is.
But, that's so interesting.
Yeah, so this is a
Are they on square bases?
Yes, they're on square
bases. What the fuck, bro?
Yeah, because the grids are squares.
So. Okay. I mean, old world's coming for you.
Yeah, it's coming for me. Not that fucking Tomb King on a derpy dinosaur. That ain't coming for me. That thing's fucking ugly. But yes, I bought a couple video games, but I got this. All right. So I have a video that I have planned for sometime, I think end of December, for Temu.
Ah, yes.
Where I ordered so much shit
from
Temu.
Yeah, yeah.
So much shit. And I didn't know this, but when a package comes to you from Temu, they take all the individual things you have and they throw a pillowcase around them and they wrap the pillowcase in packaging tape. So it comes to you as this giant amorphous, like,
blob
of little boxes.
The fuck?
I have three.
An actual pillowcase?
No.
You could sleep on it?
No.
Okay.
I mean, it's like a plastic pillowcase. It's
You
know, and you go and ship something and they have like the bags you can put it in. It's like the biggest fucking bag.
Okay.
It's like the size of a large pillow. So I have these three giant pillows arrived to my doorstep. And inside of one of those is a handful of 3D printed models that I ordered just to see what their quality was like and whatever. And those things are going to be in a billion pieces because the thing is just like everything is like moves in there.
Oh, I thought they would be like, I was imagining a pillow that's squishy wrapped around a bunch of loose objects. Like that would hold it pretty good.
Yes, you are correct in your envisioning of how it works. Other than there is no
the execution though is wacky.
Yeah, there's no cushioning, and they're not
okay.
in there like
fuck. Just a bag.
Yeah, it's just a bag. It's just a plastic bag. Like you're going to your grocery store getting groceries. It's that thin.
Okay, what the fuck?
And
all
it's
right.
and it's not like they
I
wrap,
take back all I said.
It's not like they wrap it in like a packing tape like real tight either. Like, it's just...
They just put it in a fucking lunch bag, put it in a brown box, and ship it from China to America. Yeah. Just pray that these 3D prints are going to survive.
There's no goddamn way. And
oh my God.
I'm not going to open those until the camera's rolling. Because I'm like, I want to just, you know, I want to, like, open the box and be like show a picture of what the dragon's supposed to look like and then just like turn the box sideways and have it fall out.
Just in 3,000 pieces.
You know, I mean, maybe they have the technology over there and they figured it out. Maybe those individual boxes are, they got cushioning in them.
Mm.
I gotta believe.
Temu bro.
I gotta believe the Temu bro is over there. not helping me out.
Not helping you out at all.
I spent so much money. I spent like $500 on Temu things.
Oh my God.
And if you know Temu,
that's a lot of
shit. Like 500 things.
Yeah. All right. Me for Black Friday, I had my classic, I love this holiday tradition that I have of having a text melee with Adobe about giving me their fucking Black Friday deal every year. So that always works out for me. I did that. And I bought a little webcam, a little 4K webcam that has PTZ built into it, which PTZ stands for pan, tilt, zoom. So the camera can pan, tilt, and zoom remotely and is a 4K little webcam. And so I want to add this into my gaming stream so I can get like shots of models that, you know, they move to a location, camera moves to the location, little close up, you know?
Oh,
so you can actually see the models.
Wow.
That's been the hugest area of opportunity for me in my gaming stream. Maybe not the hugest one, but people want to see the models, right? They want to see up close pictures of unpainted plastic.
Yeah. You want to see these gray things? I assure you they look just like yours.
I think some things we have painted, like my Shatterpoint force is largely painted and based. My Song of Ice and Fire Army is now mostly painted and based. So yeah, having closer shots of the models would be cool for the viewers.
Yeah, that's such a good thing. Like something about...
It was cheap too. I mean, for a webcam with PTZ built in, it was cheap.
Something about a high quality webcam. I remember when I first bought my webcam for my current setup, it was in like the midst of the COVID like pandemic. It was like late 2020 or something, and you couldn't get them.
Yeah.
And so your options were like nil. So it wasn't like I was just going to like pick which one, do research on the best one. It was just like get the Logitech one.
I didn't even think about that, dude. Like webcam, like mask sales skyrocketed. Webcam sales skyrocketed.
Everyone needed one from work from home.
Yeah, holy cow! I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, you couldn't get them for like 6 months.
Okay.
And so I haven't even looked since then. But I'm like, gosh, That would be nice. I'd get a nice one, maybe put it off to the side or something.
Mm.
Maybe that would be the catalyst for me ever streaming. Probably not, but maybe.
don't say that. You're teasing people.
Yeah. I mean, every time I come in on a stream, whether it's your stream or Zambi stream or Monument Hobby stream or Malev stream or Jamie Dagger stream,
it's a lot of streams.
And there's more. I'm forgetting someone. I apologize. Infernal Brush. You ever watch Infernal Brush?
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
How does that fucking guy paint that good on camera? He paints like true heavy metal to the nth degree while on camera.
Is your video setup like getting in the way of your quality? Because that's not, I've tried so hard my entire career to make that never happen.
Mm.
So I will get in the way of the shot before I ruin the quality of the paint job.
Yeah, that's true. I think it's more of when I am in whoops, you got a little dew on your moist boys down there.
At least it's diet dew, so it's not going to be sugary and nasty.
I don't think you actually hit
it. But I got on the moist boys?
I don't think so, but it's right here, and it's real close. Scott, for the audio listeners, just spilled his diet dew on his pants and on his chair.
It's clean now.
Right. Yeah, it's good as new. We got to break these things in. We need some Cheetos in here.
Just rubbed it into the arm of the chair.
Yeah, this is weathering powders. Okay,
see, this is the benefit of diet sodas, that you can do that. You can spill all you want, and it doesn't matter.
I have spilled diet sodas so many times in my trucks, and I'm just like, I don't give a fuck. It don't matter. It's not gonna be sticky. I'm not gonna get ants. I don't remember what I was saying.
That's okay.
So my biggest thing is just getting it to stay in focus. So I can get it to where, like, I can comfortably paint and paint to probably, like, 80 to 90%, I think, of as best as I can while I'm on camera. But that last 10 to 20% is a pretty big deal. But I just can't keep it to stay in focus, though.
It's hard,
I'm out of the way. I'm in and out when it moves so much. And autofocus cameras just, I mean.
Yeah, you picked the wrong brand. I'm sorry. I led you astray that way.
Yeah, but you watch footage when people have stuff that's autofocus and it bothers the hell out of me, and that maybe just be my own personal take.
Yeah, but when the camera hunts for focus, it's it can be annoying, but some brands got it right.
Yeah, it's like Sony's like, that's what you get a Sony for.
Yeah, it breathes. Yeah, you can see it. Hobby things for Black Friday. Yes. I didn't buy much, but I did add things. So I asked last week about board game suggestions, and I got a couple that I added to my Amazon wish list. Maybe someone will pick it up for Christmas or my birthday, which are like pretty close together. I put Star Wars Imperial Assault on there, which apparently is really good. And it's like a campaign-based game where you control one character and improve them over the course of the campaign. And then also Star Wars Galactic Empire or something like that. I'm still fucking feeling Star Wars right now. Like,
apparently.
Yeah. So those two went on the list, but I didn't buy any actual hobby stuff for Black Friday. But yeah, this is not even the preamble ramble, bro. This is not even a topic.
No.
But related to the gaming thing, I'll get into my first one. And we kind of alluded to this before the episode.
I did write Black Friday down on my preamble ramble.
Oh, you did? So. Okay, good.
We did not check that off.
Okay. So I've still been working on game design. I've been reading books. I've been making my games, writing rules, doing little play tests by myself to test individual mechanics to see that they're not, like, my numbers aren't totally broken. And one thing I was reading, which I thought was an interesting thought, was from the creator of Brass Birmingham. Do you know this game?
Uh-uh.
Brass Birmingham has been the number one game on Board Game Geek for a couple months, maybe over a year. So it's a very performant, a very beloved Euro-style board game. I haven't played it myself personally.
What does Euro-style mean?
Euro-style means there's no dice rolling. There's no fun. Yeah. Like, the majority of the information about what you can do is visible and available on the table somewhere.
Oh.
So it's like, you need to see the matrix to figure out the best way to optimize your moves for victory.
There's no, like, cards.
There are some cards. There's some tile flipping. But, like, it's mostly input randomness, not output randomness. So it's like, you're given a random slate of shit, figure out the best path forward. Not, sure, you want to do this thing? Okay, now roll dice to figure out if it happens. That's very Ameritrash. That's the genre name. They call it Ameritrash.
Nice.
You have Euro games and Ameritrash. Okay, yeah, whatever. Guess who made those fucking names? Probably a European. Yeah. But anyways, Matt Tolman had this really interesting is it Matt Tolman? Am I wrong about this?
Yeah.
He had a really interesting thought about creation. And I'm going to figure out where I put this. Stand by.
Like the creation of all things?
Yes, just creation in general.
Okay.
And this is coming from a guy who has made a game that is the number one on BoardGameGeek, which is not a feat you can just do.
This is the guy that made the No Fun Euro game.
The No Fun Euro game.
Got it.
As we said, he said, in terms of being a creator, there is no point in doing anything that's not incredible.
Wow.
What do you think of that?
Wow. Man, that's something a CEO says at their rah-rah meeting for all their employees, the annual retreat or some shit.
I feel that, but I also feel how inaccessible it is. But I think that's the point, right? I think the point is not that you are a perfectionist in that you are trying to make everything perfect. The fact that you are striving for greatness with all of your creations and not mediocrity. Mm. This just the goalpost of that, I think, is the most valuable thing. Not necessarily whether or not you're accomplishing it. Because like you can compare your outcome to like experts in your field and always feel inadequate and feel like it's not incredible. But I feel like if you're setting that goal for yourself, I feel like that's the real value.
Yeah, I like that. I like that you're shooting for the greatest thing ever. And that's okay when it's not, because it'll be better than it would have been if you were just like, I just want to make a really good game. Or I want to make a game that's fun.
Yeah, but
like,
also
I want this to be the game that everyone plays for generations. You know?
Yeah, yeah. But there's also there's the difference, right? Shooting for making the greatest game, the greatest movie. That's a huge investment, right? Shooting to make the best sandwich for your kid for lunch every day is a much smaller goal.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not necessarily relatable. But in scale, that project is much smaller. But you can still strive for greatness in small tasks, just like you can in big tasks. So like trying to make a great YouTube video is a smaller task than making a board game or a movie. But it's still like a thing you can think about. Not everything needs to take a year to make to be considered great, you know?
Yeah, I think therein lies the real kind of light bulb in this, is that greatness does not equate to time, and it does not equate to your mental energies and stress you put on yourself too.
Yeah. Or also like quality of outcome. Like that's not necessarily greatness either. It contributes, but there's so much more than just like a flashy finish, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It could be, you know, like The Room.
Yeah, that is a form of greatness.
Right. Yeah, it was so incredibly terrible that it just became great.
Yeah, you cannot plan for that level of inadequacy. It is truly amazing. And I say that with so much sincerity. Like, I really mean that. It is such a great watch if you like watching bad movies. Nothing compares to that movie. It's so enjoyable in that way.
Yes.
Yeah, you're right. That is a form of greatness. Yeah.
One thing that I think that we often get ourselves into trouble with is, I would say something like trying to paint for greatness, trying to paint a model or paint for a competition or something that's as great as anything that you could ever do, or it's something that's totally innovative or something like that, is to look at that at each step must also be great, and therein lies peril. Because if you're the core or the soul of what you're trying to do is aiming for greatness, does not mean that you have to micromanage each little aspect of it, because it will never be great if it never gets done, or it may be great and it will kill you. It's not sustainable greatness. And just trying to live off of that core of the thing that's like, this is the thing, why it's just going to be so unique and so great, and keep falling back to that instead of being like, well, I have to make sure I'm going to spend about 4 days just doing on the base coats on all this character and making sure that every little tiny thing is 100% perfect before I move on to the next step. But in the next step, you are doing things that kind of overrule the fact, let's say you're adding in a bunch of powerful shadows or a strong lighting or something like that. And all of that perfection for greatness at the base coat level is now for nothing. And you killed yourself for 4 days doing that. And I'm kind of over exaggerating, but I'm also not. Like, finding where to pull your punches, because you're focusing on the greater path on the horizon rather than every step that you take it, looking at your feet and making sure every step is perfect.
Yeah. You also, the farther you get in a paint job, the riskier it becomes, right? Yes. The more effort you have built in, the more potential you have to ruin that effort. And so this is why a lot of painters, myself included, and I think John as well, we start very wide, right? Mm-hmm. Very big brush strokes, very big ideas. And then as you finish an individual part of the model or the whole model in general, then you start to hone in. You get to get accurate, start to add in your recessed shades, your edge highlights, make everything nice and crispy. Because at that point, you haven't invested a bunch of unnecessary time, but now is the time. This is when the model is almost done. Now you strike, and then it's nice finish quality.
I had two things that stuff off of you, things you've said that.
So
I
we could definitely not have a topic this episode. Yeah. I already feel it. We're already like 23 minutes in right now, and like we are not even at what we painted.
Not even close.
There is more things I want to talk about.
Okay, so I'll do a little sidetrack, and then I'll let you get back to your note.
No, you're good. That was it for that thing.
First little moment. You talked about the two Star Wars games.
Yes.
I just heard. Was it yesterday? That I don't know if this is like common knowledge or if this is just an opinion, man. Star Wars isn't sci-fi.
Okay, yeah, okay.
It's space fantasy.
First of all, I love that you're bringing up Star Wars.
I fucking hate Star Wars.
No one wants to talk with me about Star Wars, and this makes me so happy. And yes, I've definitely heard that before, and it has definitely some merit of truth to it, because like you have wizards, you know, that can like move things telekinetically.
Yeah, it's magic, space magic, and space swords.
Exactly. So I feel that there's definitely some truth to that.
But also in the storytelling and how they approach the world.
Is
done from a fantasy perspective more than a sci-fi perspective.
Can you explain that more? I don't understand that fully.
So oftentimes in sci-fi, whether it's books or movies or whatever, that there's a lot of focus putting into where you're at, the technology of where it's at, where it all means in the greater scheme of the universe, where do the protagonists sit in this part of the universe, what is their goal, whether it's exploration, whether it's, you know, the Star Trek is the final frontier, trying to just explore,
mm-hmm.
whether it's oppression by an alien race, whether it's whatever. The storyline is driven around the setting.
Okay.
And Star Wars isn't like that. At least at its core, I haven't watched all the shows and all that to see how much it digs into that. But it's more of telling an adventure, of following a lower level storyline, and then how it tears up into something that's more relatable that doesn't need to be explained. Of like, this is why this race is like this. This alien. Scott's video just started playing out of nowhere.
What the fuck?
Does that mean your render is working? Isn't working. We have a ghost in the studio that just started playing a video. Okay, go back to work, computer. Go back to work. So yeah, that's. I mean, and I'm sure that I just butchered the explanation of all of that, but I heard that and I was like, yeah, I get it. That's why, like, as a kid, I liked Star Wars. But I didn't like Star Trek. I didn't like Babylon 5. I'm sorry.
Battlestar Galactica fan?
No. I'm sorry. I don't like Firefly. I
tried Firefly and also was not super into it, but I would definitely try it again.
I tried it 2 times.
Yeah.
I thought what you thought. Nope.
No. Like the guy that everyone loves, Nathan Fillion, he's not for me, I don't think.
Yeah. Oh,
the main protagonist in that movie.
Oh, he's so vanilla, like Clark Kent.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. It's been a while, so I can't remember what it is I disliked about his performance. But I remember being like, not super into it, because I think part of the problem is that everyone was like, this show fucking rocks. Nathan Fillion's amazing. That redheaded dude that's in Knight's Tale, he's hilarious. And then I'm just like,
he is pretty good. Yeah. He's pretty funny. He's a good comic relief character. I think at the time when that show came out, it was so different than everything else that was sci-fi that was on TV that was just so starchy Euro trash. I mean, I don't know. Just like boring ass sci-fi.
Yeah.
And it was something that had more excitement to it. Mm-hmm. And they were doing things, and there was fun in the dialogue rather than everything is heavy and all that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah. But thank you for reminding me of that. I think I'll give that another shot again. I'm very into the idea of trying things that I thought I didn't like to discover if I do like them nowadays as a 31-year-old.
Yeah. I also heard of some sci-fi TV show that's supposed to be like the best sci-fi TV show in the last 10 years.
The Expanse?
The Expanse.
Yeah.
Yes. And I heard really good things about that, so I think I want to watch that.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Have you watched it?
I haven't, but I have friends who love sci-fi TV shows that are like, you need to watch this, Scott. This is a great show. And okay. So I am in that same boat as you. I would love to watch it.
Okay, cool. All right, so maybe we'll have a little Oprah's book club on The Expanse.
All right, I can do that. I can do that.
All right, so I
have. Hold on. You talked about Star Wars, oh, and I got to talk about Star Wars.
God damn it. Take it all back.
Well, I don't know. Dude, we could argue about this forever. You said that sci-fi is more about the setting and fantasy is maybe more about like the character development. I don't know if you said that specifically about fantasy, but I feel like fantasy could also be about the setting. Like Lord of the Rings is about Middle Earth and about Mount Doom and like, you know, dealing with that and all that stuff. But I think it's a really interesting question to ask. Is this like, do sci-fi movies and fantasy movies have a difference in storytelling? Like, is it can you measure it over many movies? Is there an obvious difference? I never even thought about that question at all. And so it's really interesting to think that.
Yeah.
But we could get very deep into that. We don't need to, you know? We got places to be.
We have so many places. So many places. So my next question is a deeper one.
Is it about Star Wars?
No, it's not about Star Wars. It's not about. Although that Star Wars is a factor in this. Okay. So as you're talking about...
Wait, these are still the questions that you're reacting to what I added to my Amazon wish list?
This is about The Notebook.
Oh, okay, okay.
Just Christopher Sparks, is that the dude that wrote The Notebook?
Matt Tolman?
Something Sparks. J.R.R. Tolkien, I think? Anyway,
what the fuck?
He wrote The Notebook.
Oh, yeah, that guy, yep.
So you're doing a lot of work, obviously, at your own... pace at a way that's sustainable for you to always be kind of moving forward a little bit on this game you're working on.
Mm-hmm.
I've also noticed whether it's stuff with your free time, the things you talk about, the things that you put on your Amazon wish list, things that you are making more videos about now prior than before, is on the gaming side of things.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, where's the chicken and the egg here? Is it option A, because you had inspiration and excitement around making your own game, that has like fueled your interest in learning and experimenting with all these other games? Or that's option A. Option B is... your rediscovery of your love of a variety of games and trying out these other games has been really fun for you. And because of that, that has helped inspire you to try to make your own. Is it one or the other of those?
I love the question. ¿Por qué no los dos? Can it be both? I don't know, dude. Like, I love to see... I love gaming, just full stop. I love gaming. I also love to take something that I love and see if I can make it not better, but like something that I would enjoy. It's the same with like videos. You know, I love movies. I love movies. And then it's this thought where it's like, I could do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the same thing with gaming. It's like, I could do that. And like, I have been doing it and it's been so much fun. And so that's like really encouraging to keep doing it. And like I don't know, I love to try to make stuff because it's so much fun to figure out all the ins and outs, the processes. You learn so much about the games that are already exist and how they were made, and it adds like a different perspective to them, and you enjoy them in a different way, and like all of these things just feed the process, and it's just like, man, like this is so much fun, this is so cool, I'm learning so much. I see the Matrix, all these people they have opinions that are aligning. I can see. Like the path forward. And so like that, the feeling of discovery and creation are fueling the motivation to keep going forward. But it started from a place of loving games, and then it grew into a place of wanting to do research about how to make my own game. But I think both coexist.
Mm. So that it really truly is a chicken or the egg, because no one knows.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I think it started with me enjoying gaming. But then I wanted to make that video that I put out about board games. And that put me down a rabbit hole of like, okay, now I need to play a ton of board games. So I just... have something to say about these games in this video. And then I played a ton of board games. And I was like, all these games have interesting things. I don't like certain things. I like certain things. And started writing it down. Like, what don't I like? What do I like about these games? And then you start to, I don't know, you start to just see stuff. And then I start putting things together. And then suddenly you have a list of things that you like in games and don't like in games. And that's like the bones for making your own game, right? Like yeah. that's YouTube as well. It's like, I put into a video, you put into a video what you want to see in a video, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what makes everyone's videos special. It's like they put in what they think is necessary for your education, for your entertainment, for all that stuff. And so, I don't know. It's really fun.
Do you feel like it has ebbed and flowed? Do you feel like you're at you're always kind of going uphill in your excitement in different areas around the gaming side of things? Do you feel like, I've done that a while now, I want to keep doing more videos about gaming, I want to back off from that a bit, I want to cut it out entirely, I want the gaming to just be my recreational time, just enjoy it for it and not have it bleed over into my work as much? Do you feel like I wanted to bleed over my work more?
That's the problem, man. I feel like YouTube channels really benefit from a singular focus, yeah, right? And so I feel like, and this is kind of backed up, when I made that video introducing the idea that I want to make a game, it performed terribly. And I was like, fuck. I can't, like, I have time in a month to make two videos at the moment. I can make more if I move some things around. But those two videos have two sponsors that I need to have. And I can't in good conscience sell an ad spot for the same amount of money as a painting video, knowing full well that it is going to perform differently. So it's like, when do I make these gaming videos? And so I think, to answer your question, I think the videos about game design that I know aren't going to perform super well, just because it's not my target audience. People don't subscribe to my channel for that kind of stuff. I feel like I don't want to make that stuff because it's not going to work out great for me. But like other videos about games that have lots of production, like Kill Your Friends, I think that can work on the channel, like really, really impressive big projects, but smaller things, not so much. And so I don't know. I'm not going to say that I'm not going to make videos about it. I'm not going to like pigeonhole myself in that way, but I definitely feel like it's a potential waste of time when there are more important things that could really drive forward my YouTube channel as a whole, that more align with my audience's expectations of myself. Mm. And so I can keep this for myself. I enjoy this. This is fun to do when I'm driving, when I'm flying, when I'm sitting in bed at night, when Amber's watching Love Island. Like, this is really fun to do. And
let it, yeah.
Let it be that. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And I think too that like there is videos there.
Maybe. Yeah.
But like, as an example, your video where you did compare all these different games.
Yes.
That video did really, really well.
Yeah, it did well for my channel, for sure.
And I thought it was a really good video.
Thank you.
It was really, yeah, it's just really entertaining. And it you played the line really well, where you folded in the people that are your core audience from the gaming, from the painting perspective, mm-hmm, to it. But along the way, you actually shared more interesting information that maybe they didn't click to get, but they're glad that they experienced.
Yes. That was the whole intent. That was very intentional.
Yes. And that recipe, or an iteration of that recipe, would absolutely work along your path of creating your game. Plus, you get the extra bonus. Here's the other thing to tell yourself. Sorry, we're making sausage here again.
this is we're going far in here.
The other thing to tell yourself is that it doesn't need to perform as well as if I just did what I know will perform well in painting and XYZ, to still be very valuable as you're bringing people along the path of your game and getting them invested in the idea of, and eventually parts of your game, for them to be excited to play your game.
You're totally right. That, from a business perspective, is a great idea. You have, basically, you're just growing an audience that will potentially buy the product at the end of the process.
Yes.
Which, like, just totally in a cold business sense is very smart.
I mean, yes, it is for that. I won't discount that.
You weren't saying that, though.
I was saying that, but I was also saying that it also justifies and helps you feel when you're talking about doing something to be exceptional, that this is helping you set yourself up for that thing to be successful.
Definitely.
And you, all the work that you're doing, regardless if you have people on board for it or not, that final product is still exceptional in your eyes one day when it's complete. And so you want more people excited and talking about it and buying it and telling their friends about it or whatever. And this helps in that.
Mm-hmm.
So that isn't just about making money there. That is about, like, trust me, guys, this is really cool. Here's a way to bring you along the journey for that.
Yeah. So, I hear what you're saying. I need to think about ways to rope in my target audience into these smaller game design videos. It was obvious with the board game video. It's a little bit less obvious with this one. But again, at the end of the day, if I can't figure that out,
I just had an idea for one that would work, but I'm not gonna tell it. I'm not gonna say it right here because if I say it and the audience thinks it's awesome, but then you don't, then they'll be mad at you.
So okay,
I'll tell you later.
All right, cool. Where are we at with the preamble ramble? I have maybe one more thing maybe.
I got some stuff here.
Okay, you got some stuff.
Let's see here. Oh, I want to show my new toy.
Oh yes.
Okay, so I've kickstarted this thing.
I'm surprised it came fast.
Oh, yeah. It's one of that companies where this is not their first go-round.
Okay.
And they already have a product that's like this, but it's bigger, and it's kind of less on-the-go version. And this has a little remote, too. You can remote
control
this thing,
too. Oh, that's fucking cool.
And this is the Smoke Ninja. So I backed this in, like, I don't know, August or some shit.
Yeah.
And I got it already.
Damn.
So this is a pocket smoke machine. And so if you saw my recent video of the Necron that we're going to talk about in a little bit, that I did some funny stuff with this. But yeah, it's you put in the stuff that they just say is some kind of special oil, but it sounds like it's mostly just like vegetable oil.
Okay.
And as I did a whole bunch of smoke on my table to do the shots for the Necron, the next day there was like a slight film on my table.
Yeah.
Which is like where and I put a ton of this stuff in there.
I think that's the unfortunate side effect of using a smoke machine. Mine does the same thing as well.
Yeah, it's just whatever things that it's burning.
They eventually condensate on a surface and then turn into oil.
Now, it needs quite a bit of it, I've found. Like, I didn't feel any on the model itself. But when I was doing the dry ice mode where I had a whole bunch just, like, sitting on that table, and then it just sat there for probably an hour, I forgot to, like, let it go. It just kind of went. So anyway, this thing is pretty cool. It was not cheap. It was like $275.
Yeah.
But it is a thing that reminds me of the nice tools in mini painting that we have. But this is more for video side, but or even if anyone wanted to take their awesome glamour shots of their miniatures. But tools that do a thing really well and their barrier for entry to just use it is so low.
Yeah.
Are the best freaking tools.
I know, yeah. I totally get you.
I go back to the one thing that I often think about with that is the Wow Stick, which is the little electric drill.
Mm-hmm. Battery-powered one?
Battery-powered drill that it works at just the right speed. It's still got high torque. It's just like, oh, I take it out. I need it. I need that small size, or whether I'm doing a pin or whether I'm whatever I need. It just works really well. And yeah, it's like a $60, $70 tool. But when I have it compared to just doing the hand drills, it's just so much better.
Dude, yeah. Imagine trying to do anything with tools and half of the tools failing you, requiring some kind of prerequisite knowledge. It slows you down. It slows you down so much, which is why I always harp on tools getting out of my way. Because it's so important just to be able to work with something and have it do what it says it's going to do on the fucking tin, you know?
Oops, I turned it off.
So yeah, this thing's got multiple modes. It's got a chiller in it, so it can produce low-lying fog as well.
So this is supposed to be, am I out of juice? Kind of sounds like it's out of juice. I used all the juice. Oh no, there it is. This is steam.
Oh, so it's like a little haze.
Yeah. But it just like floats up with the little steam clouds. It's just like, ooh, your morning coffee is steamy.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. The water's actually boiling in there instead of boiling water. This one doesn't have nearly as much uses in our miniature focus.
So are we going to see every beauty shot you have now with fog in it?
Yeah, dude. It's going to all be Vape Nation up in here.
Okay.
It's like, well, when I started filming, so I was filming for this and I was doing some 360s. First of all, there's a level of, I've learned, of trickiness to like placing it and the timing and then when you get the right shot. It's not just like you place it and then it's just like, oh, it's just there and I can just take this shot for the next 5 minutes and it will do. It's like, no, you got to really work for it. When I started looking at that footage that I did, I'm like, oh man, this reminds me so much of the last couple of years, how GW does their product reveals where they have a level of smoke or they do like a speed swirl 360. Where the smoke's there, and as they slow down the 360, then the smoke is mostly gone, and then you just, like, the model is there.
Yeah, requires a certain degree of luck.
Yes, it does. Yeah. I learned that. I did, like, 5 tries of trying to do that with the 360 on this guy, and one of them worked.
Yeah, you gotta just give it a couple shots. I totally feel that.
The other thing I found out that was fucking with me, and I didn't realize what was happening because I'm an idiot, so I'm rolling this thing for a while trying to get the smoke shit to work. And I realized my air purifier in my room had kicked on. And it was pulling it all right. And I'm like looking through the screen on my camera. I'm like, why is all the smoke just going that way?
Yeah, dude, it's doing its job.
It's like, oh, it's just sucking up all my juices over there.
All my juices.
So note to self, turn off my air purifier.
It's also good for the longevity of that thing's filter as well. You're not sucking up.
You're just sucking up all the oils.
All the oils, yeah.
Yeah.
One thing that GW could learn from this, and most people who want to use smoke as well, is if you shoot the video that you have when using the smoke effect in slow motion, and then you play it back in slow motion, it looks like two-scale fog. Because the biggest problem with smoke machines is that the air moves too rapidly.
Sure. And for it to be at scale.
Exactly. So if you just shoot it in slow-mo and play it back in 24 FPS or whatever FPS you use, it will look much more realistic. Which I learned from a smaller YouTube channel called, I forget, but he makes scale model buildings. So like 1/8 scale buildings and then like films in the buildings and they look like real places. And that was one of his tips for people. He's like, if you want to film scale models, make them look real, have fog look real, shoot it in slow-mo, play it back in real time. It'll look better. And so I didn't know that, but it definitely works.
Huh. Very cool.
Yeah. All right. So the things I'm talking about right now are from a book called The Board Game Design Advice. I wouldn't necessarily recommend it. It's the same question asked to many different designers. So that's cool to see sometimes. Like one question I love to read is, what's a purchase you made under $50 in the last 6 months that really helped you in your design process? So it's cool to see all these individual tools. But a lot of questions have very similar answers. And so it kind of feels boring to read at times. But there are some pearls. And one that I liked was from, his name is D. Brad Talon Jr. It's like, Jesus Christ, pick a fucking name, bro. I mean, this is what the book had. He picked a name, probably. But he said that excitement exists in the space between discovery and mastery. You feel that?
Oh.
The excitement exists between discovery and mastery.
Yeah.
That definitely applies for me.
Yeah, you know what that reminds me of?
What does that remind you of?
World of Warcraft.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, you just like, you discover the game, you get into it, and you're just like, oh man, this is pretty cool.
You can see the end goal.
Yeah.
Right?
You know what the end goal is? Getting max level and going on these awesome raids.
Yeah.
But the journey along the way is where the real excitement happens.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's like you can see the end goal. You can see some of the basic steps and you know it's time to start doing it yourself. And so it's like that whole process is so much fun. And like tangential to this, related to this, a lot of the advice had thoughts like this. It's important that the player has a sense of, no. Your game is the experience it offers. That's all it is. It isn't the theme. It isn't like the rolling of dice, the individual mechanics. It isn't
the models.
The models, the designer expressing how cool of a board game designer they are. It is solely the fun it offers. Mm. If you lose sight of that, you lose sight of this ability to show the process between mastery and discovery, the game is dead.
Yeah.
It's not a good game, right?
Yeah, that middle ground of the excitement between the bookends is not there.
Yeah.
And that's where, if you look at any single game, whether it's a video game, whether it's a board game, whether it's a card game, whether whatever, if that excitement in the middle isn't there, it's you're just going to stop playing.
Right.
It's not going to be good.
Right.
And a sidetrack to that is then the discovery side, that discovery period being too long before you get to the excitement stuff, you can lose them before you even got them.
Bro, that is another piece of advice in another book I read, A Theory of Fun, which is like make it super fast for your player to see like the engine of your game.
Yeah.
Like let them get into it right away because, if you delay it, it's frustrating and then they're just gone.
They're just gone. Yeah, this is good. I should write a book about
You should write a book about board game
designs.
Yeah. I want to read it.
Yeah.
I'll read any book you write.
Okay.
It's going to be a fucking ride. I know it.
Dude, writing is so much freaking work. I find that Did you ever think about before you started doing YouTube full time? You probably did cuz you're smart and I did. How much writing you end up doing is your job?
No, dude. I did not think about that. But I have thought about that now. And I'm like, man, I really took for granted, like, my English classes.
Yeah.
Like, writing papers. That's 100% what I'm doing right now.
Yes. Yeah. It's so much writing. I've lucked out in that I did a lot of writing in my career leading up to this. So I didn't really think about it much. But then when I backed off from like doing that as being my day job and then just doing this, I'm like, god damn, I'm writing a lot.
Yeah.
And and not every YouTuber or YouTube channel or whatever, they write or do different variations. It's for what works for you, but I end up writing a lot.
Yeah.
But then it's the task of like, how do you make that writing seem like you didn't write it?
Yes, yes.
When you deliver it.
Yeah, because it's especially hard when you're trying to say something genuine.
Yes.
Like in this video with Roman, like I get a little, I go to a bit of a dark place. And then there's a resurgence at the end. And it's not that I'm trying to make a typical story arc where there's like a problem and a resolution. That was my genuine experience. And it's hard to say that without looking like you're trying to sell it for like more views and clicks, but also like I just want people to know where I'm coming from. Like I want people to know the truth. That people, they're so concerned with the truth all the time. They're like, oh, I can tell that Scott was unhappy in this video and whatnot. And that's like wrong 80% of the time. And so I want to just like let people know like this is my experience and this is what happened. But yeah, it's hard to not be disingenuous or seem disingenuous.
I got a just the right change of topic here.
Okay,
to
okay.
Get us excited and not disingenuous.
Okay.
I discovered something new that came out that is changed my whole view on life.
Okay. This is okay. I can't wait to hear this.
It is alcoholic Monster Energy drinks.
Jesus Christ.
They make Monster Energy alcoholic.
The Europeans don't think we're adults, and this is why.
Listen, hear me out on this.
Okay, all right.
The most fucked up thing about Monster Energy alcoholic drinks in a can is that they have zero caffeine.
What? Okay. Well, if they did, wouldn't we get into like a Four Loko place where like people are fucking dying and shit?
Dude, no, I want to go there.
I want to die.
Dude, I have a Four Loko is my homeboy for life, dude.
Oh my god. Yeah. Okay, I can totally see that. You were a Four Loko consumer.
Dude, yeah, dude. You ever want to be uppers and downers at the same time at a point that makes your brain like the little like electrodes in your brain don't know where to shoot off and it just shoots off in random directions?
Yeah, I'm definitely a fan of heart attacks. Yeah, sure. Yeah,
it's not about having a heart attack, it's about feeling like you're having a heart attack.
Oh, that's a desirable thing.
It's a totally different thing, my man. Totally different thing.
That reminds me, I just watched a movie called Talk to Me, which is a horror movie, but the basic premise is that if you don't want to hear a spoiler, it's not really a spoiler, it's the plot of the movie. Children discover a hand that when they hold it and say talk to me possesses them. But if you have a friend in the room to remove your hand after a minute, you're golden. The monsters don't get you. And so these kids are passing around his hand, experiencing possession for a minute, and then And then, like, oh, man, that was a crazy trip. And, like, they're all at a party. Instead of ripping a bong, they're getting possessed.
Demonic possession.
And you can see how this is going to end in
failure, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But that's the same thing. It's like, you know, it's about feeling like you're possessed, not actually being possessed.
So we just need to do a remake of that movie, but instead of holding the hand, you just have to hold it to Four Loko.
It's like, oh, God. I can feel it. My arteries.
Yeah, you can sip it for 1 minute. Just keep sipping for 1 minute, but then they got to take it away from you because if you drink that whole thing.
Yeah, dude, you're fucked.
You're in trubs. I mean.
You're in trubs.
You know. So, yeah, I tried that, and it's zero sugar as well.
Okay.
You know, so you're not going to mess up your sticky minis. You're drinking, you know, Monster Energies. And it comes in 4 different flavors. And
it gets you drunk.
And it gets you, yeah, it's like 6% alcohol, so it's not nothing.
Wait, but it's not, there's no caffeine, though. It's like Monster's whole thing.
Yeah, they have this, like, our story thing in the back of the box about why. I didn't read it, but they explain the why. But I'll tell you this. I like it better than the Hard Mountain Dew. The flavor is much better, you know? So, I mean, we're here.
Okay, yeah. I love the, like, whenever I hear, like, our story or about me, normally it's like a nice story. You know, it's like
a small, like, family farm.
Yeah, yeah, we get all of our stuff locally. It's like, this is a alcoholic energy drink. I don't give a fuck about your story. The only thing that matters is the end result. It's like, I don't care what your motivations were in designing this heinous product.
I wish I would have brought the box with so we could read the story for all the goody peepees right
now. It sounds so lovely, you know?
It sounds so nice. It sounds like they, like, roast their own walnuts in the backyard or some shit.
Damn. Wow. Yeah. I didn't know that Monster cared so much about the end product.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying, it's worth a try.
I would try it, 100%.
Yeah, so they got 4 flavors.
Are you a salesman?
Yeah, okay. And 2 of the flavors are actually just colors. So
red and green.
No. Oh, yeah, green. Green's a flavor. Peach is a flavor. Like a wild berry is a flavor. And white is a flavor.
White is a flavor.
And white is the best color of Monster. So
okay.
I mean, that sounded racist.
Yeah, but. I was like, how is he gonna end this sentence? White is the best Monster flavor. I was like, oh, okay, thank God.
Yeah, all Monster colors are great.
I like the green one. I like the apple one a lot.
That's this green one is not apple. It's like the OG traditional very first Monster.
Oh, yeah,
with the green M,
yeah,
not the green can.
Yeah. Very
black
different.
Can, green M. And it tastes most like Red Bull. Because when Monster came out, they were like one of the first ones, if not the first one, after it was only Red Bull.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Red Bull was the only energy drink for the longest time. And so it seemed like Monster's strategy was to be reminiscent of Red Bull. So it had that, like, sucking on pennies flavor but with like a little bit of extra non sucking on pennies flavor added.
Yeah, okay.
But it's still there. It tastes like you're drinking chemicals.
Yeah. I've never been a fan of Red Bull. But yeah, I like the apple stuff. I like Peachy Keen. Did the orange one? You like that one?
Yeah. This is Peachy Keen alcoholic.
Okay.
Yeah, it's real good.
Remember how I said I like fruity drinks in the morning?
Yeah, dude. Nothing.
that's all Monster, man.
You would get so much more work done in your workday if you started every morning with a Peachy Keen alcoholic Monster.
Yeah, well, the fucking non-alcoholic isn't doing the trick, so. I might as well try.
Listen, we're going to do a video. It's going to be about this little man's right here. What if this little guy fought this little guy? Just record all that. It'll be gold.
I think it'd be gold.
It'll be gold. It reminds me, we haven't done a drunken mini painting in a while.
We haven't. And those are always pretty easy to do. Like, the actual recording day is a little hectic, but afterwards you just kind of sit down and crank a video out in 2 days.
I know. I mean, we do need to do another one of those. I think the reason why, because I'm sure I'll answer the question no giddy peepee has asked, and that is, you know, why haven't you done more of those? Because we used to do one every year for like 3 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, we just both were just so busy.
Mm-hmm.
And we had so much going on. It was just like literally finding like a Friday. It would probably work best if we did like podcast day. So I'm coming up on Friday. We go do lunch. We get everything set up, whatever. We record in the evening. And then we sleep. And then that's it.
And we don't throw up.
And we don't throw up.
That's the other thing about it. It's not fun to do.
It's really fun until it's not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's exactly how to describe it.
Yeah. But like if you don't get there, because one time we did it and we did not get super drunk. And guess what? That wasn't as funny.
It wasn't as fun. But when Daryl's there and he's breaking out a bong, and I've literally never drank out of a beer bong in my life.
I thought you were going to die. I wish I would have had a camera and just taken the 7-minute shot of you sitting at your painting desk with the lights on, the painting lights above you. The rest of the basement is pitch dark. You're sitting there in your chair with like the hunch pose, like you were just like defaulted to your mini painting pose, and your face was white as a fucking ghost. And you're just sitting there, eyes mostly closed, and just being there.
I was just...
You weren't doing anything?
I couldn't do anything.
You couldn't talk?
I couldn't.
You tried to talk.
Yeah.
It was mostly like whispers. And like, you looked like you were about to start painting, but you weren't. There was no brush. There was no mini.
No, dude. I remember. We ended, and I was like, let's do a gaming stream. I was like, oh, we're drunk. Let's do a gaming stream. So I started fucking setting up cameras and shit. And then I was like, oh, I'm dying right now.
Yeah. Yeah, you just get, like, it hit you. Yeah. And you're just like, noosh.
And I just sat down, and I remember putting my head... just laying my head down on the desk at some point, and just like I could hear everyone talking around me. I heard Dan talks, you know, he's a chatter. He was off talking about fucking some shit like Star Wars or Song of Ice and Fire or something, and you know, people were moving around, and then I eventually army crawled to the bathroom and just vomited my fucking whole stomach out, and it was great.
I was surprised that you weren't after that. You weren't just like good, because usually if I do that, then I'm good.
I feel like sometimes you get good. Sometimes it works, and like, yes. But also, sometimes then it creeps back. And it's like, okay, I was good for 10 minutes. Now I feel like shit again. It's like, oh, you know what's going to happen.
Yeah, you had the nauseousness that didn't go away.
Yeah. Then you puke again, and then you're good. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Dan was just talking.
He
showed up, and then he was all ready to go play Song of Ice and Fire. He had his army.
I know.
He had all the models out.
We're going to stream after this. This is definitely going to happen.
It didn't
happen.
These were all good decisions at the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, that was the preamble ramble. It was an hour long.
Good.
Wow.
What did we paint?
Oh, my God. Okay, let's talk about that. I didn't paint a whole lot. I painted 2 days in the past fucking 2 weeks, and that was on my streaming days. I've been editing otherwise and doing other things, working on the Kickstarter masterclass course and working on my video about my trip to Italy, which is done, but Adobe is fucking me right now and not letting the video render. It's all Adobe's fault.
Yes.
But anyways, not a lot of progress, but I have painted a large portion of my iron makers. The remaining tasks for them are to highlight the gold and the silver elements, toss some blood on their weapons, and then they're done, I think.
I'm going to pick a random one out of here, just like I'm picking a little chocolate out of the Russell Stover's box.
There you go. So yeah,
better not be fucking coconut, Scott.
So I need to highlight the silver and the gold, and add some blood. And I think they're done then.
How much do you? Is this your last unit? You have more stuff to do?
I got one unit of drowned men left, which is not really a unit. It's a big base with 3 dudes on it.
Okay.
So that's it. After that, I'm done.
And you need these done so then you can do your kill your friends at this game, right?
Yeah, I need to film beauty shots of this army, and so they need to be done. But they're close. A couple of highlights on the most important detail, the silver and the gold, and then they should be golden. What I want to ask you is, I dry brushed the fur. You grabbed a guy that didn't have fur.
All right, give me that fur.
And I'm just curious. Like I did the classic base coat, wash, dry brush. I started to layer them, but there's so many strands of fur. It just took forever. And so do you think the dry brush is enough? I was considering airbrushing some shading around the very edge of the fur with some sepia and then calling it a day. I was considering airbrushing like a little squirt of white right by the nape, right by their neck, you know, a little squirt.
I'm always a fan of a little squirt of white.
Are you? You, you fucking.
That's a good question. I think,
or is it good as is?
I would just leave it as is.
Okay. All right. No squirts.
You're putting too much in this now. Like, okay. This, it looks good. You have depth to it. You have the dark browns. You can see the mid-tone and a highlight on it.
Yeah, looking at it here in the tray, it looks fine.
Yeah, I wouldn't stress about it. You, if you did that step for the rest of your life, you would notice it and be happy with it like 5% of the time. The other 95, you'd have the same reaction as you holding it right now, mm-hmm. you know? And so I wouldn't do that. But I mean, if you did something with an airbrush, you could do it very fast. But then it's the worry of, is it going to make enough of an impact
to be worthwhile? Also, I have highlighted the cape with like a teal color, mm-hmm. and there is a real risk of
you're going to hit that teal.
100% going to hit that teal, yeah. Unless I mask them with like paper or something, and that kind of gets old fast.
That defeats the whole freaking purpose, because then it's just so much labor intensive.
Right. Yeah. And so the sepia will show up on that bright teal, and it will look orange. So yeah, not worth it. I don't think so.
The only thing I would think that you could do to do something fast but still have a fun effect, and I would probably, if it was, I'm trying to think where I'd want the darker side. Do you want it closer to their neck, or do you want it down by their shoulders? I don't know the answer to that question right off the top of my head, but you could do like a wet blend with something like
a little glazy glaze?
Yeah.
Shading? Or what are you saying? You're saying
yeah, so you're going to work quick to make a bigger impact. So the wet blend, where you'd plate, you know, you'd make a U shape, whether it's around the neck, the U of the fur all the way around the neck, or a bigger U all the way around the hem. And then you wash your brush out, and you want a good amount of water still on there, because when you go over and then pull it back out, you're going to get that nice full fade.
And it's a textured surface too, so yeah. It's going to work real well.
Yeah. So that would, if you wanted an impact but still fast, I think that's probably your best bet.
Sometimes I just forget about the paintbrush,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like glazing in my head, that takes way too long. What are you fucking saying? But on this, that's doable, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. Also, I think it looks great right now.
Yeah, yeah. I may try it on one and see.
Yeah, it's not bad. If you have one of them that's like maybe a hero or somebody that's just a one-off dude, so you wouldn't feel bad if his looks slightly different than other people's.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you could do that and see if you like it for everything.
Okay,
sure.
Okay. Damn it, I had a question and I forgot. Oh, about the order of operations. I don't know how often you batch paint, but like, or just this happens in normal painting too. I feel like when I'm painting, I don't really think about, like, if it's a new model, I don't really think about order of operations. Like, okay, I should have dry brushed this first. I should have airbrushed this part first, because then the overspray wouldn't have mattered. I would have covered it up with future layers on this cape part.
Mm-hmm.
I think about that a little bit, but I don't think about it a lot. And I feel like I'd really benefit from, like, figuring that out with a test model and then employing it on a whole thing. Are you pretty good about, like, having a sound scheme, like, order-wise? Going into a process, or do you have to kind of discover it?
I'm the same way, where I could tell you what I think. I look at the model, a gray model, and tell you what I think. But then after doing a test model, I feel like it's much more refined.
Okay.
So I feel like I can probably get somewhere between around 25%, 30% of the way there of what is the ideal thing. But I won't get that extra 70%. Until I actually just do it, because there's things you just didn't realize or in theory are different than in execution. And I actually just kind of went through that with the thing that I painted this week, so we're going to have a good segue. I can talk about that with mine. All right, I painted this. Oh, shoot, I wrote down what his actual name is. I don't want to get it wrong. Imhotep the Storm Lord.
The Storm Lord.
Yeah, a.k.a. the Vape Lord. So what I decided to do with this is in the new heroes for Necron, was I wanted to follow the Games Workshop videos on how they paint the Zakarin dynasty, which is what he is, which is what he's painted as on the box art, and follow that as far as I could to try to get to the box art and identify where they're straight up lying to us or teaching us in a way that is not following the box art. And I don't mean to the level of technical execution. I mean just straight up not doing the wrong colors.
Yeah.
Doing the wrong, doing inconsistencies, choosing to do X instead of Y when the box art is obviously doing Y, but you just chose to do a tell us to do something different. When that's something, the big thing was the something different where there was always discrepancies were not for the sake of making it easier for painters. And that's where I got really frustrated, was that they weren't doing something for ease of keeping it more inclusive to painters of all levels, making the barrier of entry low for new painters. And then it was just more of like, okay, here's what I'm doing different than what they're saying and why I'm doing it. And then and then end up trying to get to level of box art execution within reason. And one of the things that they do is they want you to do, in all Games Workshop videos, at least all the ones I've seen, I've not seen every single one, but I've seen a lot, they have you base coat the entire model first. Every color gets its base color on there before you move to step two. And I understand that in theory, where in trying to keep it simplistic or easy to follow steps, step one is base coat. Well, let's do that step for everything before we move on to step two. And I kind of get that. That kind of makes sense. But you run into so many frustrating points when you do it that way. You run into having to fix your own mistakes, or you don't fix them and your final quality of your product turns out worse because you either didn't catch that you just got paint here and you didn't want it to, and you thought that part was already painted, or you're just like, this is taking me so long to go through and fix steps after step one and then fix all these things again after step two and then fix all these things again after step three because you're doing them in these sequential orders.
Let me ask a question. Can you give me an example on this model how, or like anywhere, like how base coating everything was worse off, like from a time perspective, than doing it a different way?
I would have done the cloak to completion before painting just about everything else.
And what would that have done for your process?
First of all, the cloak's really hard to reach.
Yeah.
And I was, in hindsight, you could say, well, you should have done it in subassemblies, in theory.
They don't do that in that video.
Except for, and I would have noted that if it would have been smart. But that cloak is attached to the back half of each of your shoulder pads. Yeah. So you cannot do that in subassemblies and not have a fucking mess when you then assemble it. Now, I guess, yeah, anyway. So... There is a nuanced way that I think you could do that, but I had to do some fiddling with sprue goo to make those shoulders like kind of seamless and everything, and then it suddenly gets weird really quickly there.
It does get weird quickly.
I ended up dry brushing the cloak. That's all dry brush.
Like the blends are dry brush?
Yeah, that's all dry brush. Other than there's a couple of the pan or the plates that I went over and just did with an extra layer with a brush of the brightest color to really make those feel like they're shiny, reflective a little bit more. But it's everything else is all dry brush. All like the little edge highlighting, everything, it's all dry brush. And then I went through and did a glaze of purple in the shadows to boost that a little bit.
Okay, I was seeing that some purple in the recesses, and I was like, how did that get in there if you were dry brushing that?
Yeah, that's just the last step over the top of everything.
Okay.
But because then I'm dry brushing, I had all this shit base coated, and all up on the backside where all the shoulders were, it was just like, it was all green. It was like, and I did that after I did all the shade step. So not only do I just have to fix all of the base coat thing, now I have to kind of like repaint the base coat on all that shoulder pad that I had not touched with green, because then you're going to have an inconsistency with the shade being consistent over everything.
Yeah.
The wash. And so it was just kind of a mess.
Yeah, that makes sense. If your paint plan includes dry brushing, airbrushing, or a technique where you could potentially, in a big way, mess up a neighboring part of the model, then you shouldn't have painted that part of the model. And that's like just bad advice, straight up.
Yeah.
Okay, dry brushing, eh? It looks really good. I'm looking at the cloak the most because it just has really satisfying volumes, and you executed them nicely, and so it's nice to look at. I didn't once think about dry brushing until you mentioned it. Then I like started to like look closely, and sure, I can see a little bit, but I didn't know until you said it. So
there's a really thin glaze of like yellow that's been put over from the mid tones up to the top, and that kind of fuzzes everything together in a nice way too, and adds a little warmth, because I noticed on the box art their cloak looked warmer than mine, even though I was 90% certain I was using the exact same paints, the same GW paints in the same order. But yeah, that dry brushing, if you do that trick where you have your dry brush isn't 100% dry, you have a little bit of dampness to it, and then you don't get nearly as much of the chalky look. But
do you wet your dry brush?
So in the Artis Opus dry brush sets that they have, including the special Ninjan edition, they come with this little puck, and inside this puck is just a circle of hard foam. It's not a hard foam, it's not a soft foam, somewhere in the middle. And what you do is you add a handful of drops of water to that foam, and then you kind of use your finger to push that water into the foam, because otherwise, you know, water will kind of just sit on the top of foam. Uh-huh. So you kind of push it and rub it around in there, and so you have this damp thing. And what you do is, before you ever bring your brush to your paint on your dry palette, you kind of tamp it on that foam. So just a bit, just a tiniest amount of moisture. You do not put it in your water cup. You do not want it soaked up. And it's a learning by feel thing. It's a little bit of using the force of understanding how much dampness you want, because you don't want to go and then add paint from your dry palette and then it makes your paint more watery.
Do we talk about Star Wars?
Yeah.
You know, that's
Star Wars?
So
Star Wars?
So apparently you can tell that I haven't watched any videos about dry brushing. I thought I knew the technique, but I've been struggling. It doesn't look amazing. Like I feel like I've seen other people accomplish, like the Artis Opus guys. And that makes sense. A little bit of moisture.
Yeah. Byron from Artis Opus. So Artis Opus does have their own YouTube channel, and he does a lot of nice tutorials on there of breaking that down. Way back when Vince and I did a dry brush off, where we both did videos only dry brushing, the only thing we could do. I did not do it that way. And afterwards, Byron's like, there's things that you did that I don't do that I thought really worked. Also, here's the way that I do it. And he explained that way. And I tried it and I'm like, oh yeah, for a lot of things, this really works. There's a couple things that this cloak really has going for it. First of all, it's a nice big organic volume.
Yeah, yeah.
So that really works. Also, it's got a lot of little textures on it, which helps. Mm-hmm. This being made of plates actually helped using dry brush, as opposed to if it was just fully flowy cloth. It would still work there, but it felt more satisfying to do it this way, because then I would like grab the little edges, and it almost allowed you to do the edge of each plate like you were doing, building up the edge highlights as you went around.
Right, right. Yeah, it's suited to it for sure.
Yeah.
So I have a question about this. Do they say in the videos that their goal is heavy metal box art?
No, not explicitly.
Okay.
But
obviously they're following the color scheme.
Yes.
Of course.
There's a lot of implying to it.
Okay.
That what they're doing is trying to get you, especially when they go to the, nowadays they have two different forms of videos. They have, I can't remember what the entry level one is. Oh, it's table. It's either table ready. Yeah. So there's contrast version.
Of course, fucking GW would make up their own. Fucking
yeah, their
name.
Own terms, right? They also glaze in a lot of their videos, and they don't call it glazing.
What do they call it?
They just call it mix in 50% lamy and medium, and use very thin layers.
Oh my god!
And it pissed me off. Because they're trying to be really approachable on how to do all these techniques, when instead you're just confusing people and you're not allowing them to have access to other forms of education online, that if they just use that one word, they could do more education themselves. They're trying to keep you in their own silo.
I appreciate how they want to make everything themselves. I really appreciate that. Yep. I also want to do that, but when you just intentionally don't play along with the rest of the community, despite your customers, come on, bro.
Okay, so they have what it used to be in the old GW videos, where it was pretty straightforward that they were, especially like the old Duncan ones. There's a great example of like painting Nagash. Duncan had a multi-part series on the GW channel.
I've watched this.
That is 100% trying to paint it like the box art. All their old stuff was. And then at a certain point, they separated it. And so they separate to battle ready And then they folded in when the contrast range came. They have two different versions of Battle Ready, which is just kind of basic painting, where it's the contrast version, and then there's the traditional version. Then they also have a series of videos, which roughly comprises about, give or take, 40%, maybe more, of the total videos that they put out that are called Parade Ready. Okay? Parade Ready stands for Armies on Parade.
Right.
Do you know what Armies on Parade is? It's a fucking painting competition.
For armies.
For your armies.
Big dioramas.
And in those videos, they go from the Battle Ready or the basics of base coat and wash, and they layer up, they edge highlight, they are pushing you to that final version at the end of the Parade Ready videos is to emulate the box art.
Okay.
And they do not say at the end of this, it's supposed to look like this, but they'll even show it.
Okay.
So my issue then is when they're implying this all the way, but then they're explicitly doing things differently than the actual box art they have. And you know they have full access to the heavy metal team to just say, what paint did you use? What wash did you use? What color did you do to use the shadows? They just don't do it sometimes. Sometimes they do. But the point is, even if you're doing this from a beginning painter, you're going to walk away with looking at yours in the box art, and it's not going to look anything like it. Not because you're not good, but because the colors are all off. And the techniques that are not difficult techniques. I'm not talking about having you do wet blending over shit. Just not difficult techniques. They're just using the wrong techniques. So it's just not going to look like that. And that part of it, like tying back to the thing that we talk about their mission statement as a company, which has been said by multiple people at high levels in their companies about it being approachable and creating a system where anyone can get into it and be happy with their painted toy soldiers. They're not tying these decisions back to it. And so it's just kind of an exploration in what does it actually look like? What would the process be if I did a video for them that I wanted it to look like the box art, but still approachable? Is that possible? So that was kind of the exploration here. Is it possible? Would I lose people? Is it too complex? And what I came to the conclusion was my video and what I showed there is no more complex than their Parade Ready videos. It's just actually getting you to the thing that's on the box that everyone looks at and says, wow. And it's not going to look as good because you're not an heavy metal painter, but it'll look a lot closer. It's wild.
So, okay, so you weren't following the process they were showing off. You were making your own while looking at what they're doing as like a comparison.
I followed their process to where in each different section or each different color, or each different part of the model, I followed their process until I hit a pain point. And so I would stay on track until there was something where I'm like, nope, that's not right. Let's figure out what's not right, why it's not right, and was there a reason behind them making that decision? And every time there was like, there's no logical reason. They just use the wrong paints so often. They use, and then for the shades of the bronzes, they just use Agrax Earthshade over everything. When in the box arts, they don't use Agrax Earthshade. After a number of experimentations that I did with combining their own products, their own shades together to find something that felt right, and then maybe poking somebody that would have insider knowledge on this to confirm, all it is a 50-50 mix of their Reichlin Flesh Shade and their Druchy Violet Purple Shade.
Okay, I was going to say, probably purple, right?
It's purple and flesh wash, 50-50 mix. So what you're saying is, we want you to paint like this. We make the products for it to look like this, but we're not going to teach you this because we think it's too difficult for you to put one brush full of this and one brush full of this on your palette, mix them up, and then use that instead of just Agrax. Dudes, you would sell 2 times as many pots because they have to buy both colors. Like, why are you teaching me the wrong thing?
Yeah.
They also have you.
Also, the brown isn't anywhere near as dark as the purple will be on a thing that's bronze and kind of like a mid-level value anyways.
Yeah.
That's not going to give you enough contrast. Maybe over many layers, but like, you need darkness.
And one thing I really tried to hold myself to was everything that I referenced, that I looked back to, that I tried to really figure out, was the Zarakon Dynasty. because I wanted to make sure, because in their books, in their lore, how they work, their different sub-factions in their color schemes are always quite specific. So I didn't want to pick one. It's like, well, yeah, they're saying to use gold here, but it's a different dynasty. So, or the video or the, their guide on their website or whatever didn't specify which dynasty it was. I wasn't going to use any of that because they could then claim or not be this. So I wanted to make sure that everything I did, it said Zarakon in it because that's what the box art is. So I wanted to make sure what they're doing there too. So yeah, there's a bunch of different stuff. I also had to find my own way to do their glow because the Tesseract glow is the one that they use. Well, some of their videos, they do the glow from dark up to light. And some of them, they base coat white and they do the Tesseract glow, which is basically a contrast paint, but it's a technical paint and you can't find it anywhere. I couldn't find it in any stores within like 100 miles of where I live, including the source, including anywhere. No one carries that paint anymore. So I had to find a way to make my own, which found out it's really fucking easy. It's just three parts fluo yellow to one part screaming scorpion contrast paint, and it's the exact color. So a lot of their stuff, I found out with their contrast range specifically, that are really vibrant, bright stuff, uses fluo paint in it.
Mm.
And so, which totally makes sense.
Right, yeah. They don't need to say it's fluo, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't make a difference. It's interesting. I haven't watched a GW painting video in like, I don't know, like 4 years. A long time. I was working at Cray in the old St. Paul building when I was watching that shit. Like, it was a while ago. It's interesting to hear your experience watching that from the perspective of that exact same job. You are an educator, an online video-based miniature painting educator. You're doing the same job that they're doing. And that perspective is so interesting because, like, the question that I always have is like, and the frustrating answer is you don't know, is like, why did you do it this way? And it's just like, there's no justifiable reason why the corner was being cut, because it's, you didn't make it easier. You're not selling as many products as you potentially could, like, which is a huge thing for like a consumer based like company. And is it just laziness? Is that what it is? Which, you know, that's kind of a unsatisfying answer, but it's so interesting with this new angle you have watching this content and like looking at it critically.
Yeah, I enjoy it. I find it fun, and I know it kind of comes across as me shitting on GW, and that's not entirely what I'm trying to do. I question their decision-making on some things, and I don't mean that in a like mean way to the boots-on-the-ground people that really love what they do and care about what they're doing in their job at GW. But I'm just like, man, if it was me doing this, why would some obvious things, why aren't they doing?
Right, and it's okay to be critical of stuff.
Yeah.
Okay? People give a lot of flack for anyone being critical of stuff. And you know what? This is just John's opinion. This is just my opinion. We're coming from a place of some amount of knowledge in the field, and you can take it or leave it.
Mm.
But if someone insults a thing, or not insults, but if someone criticizes a thing that you love, we're not criticizing you as a person, right? You got to be able to hear that criticism and take it or leave it. Hear it for what it is, consider it, and then move on. Like, it's okay to be critical of things. And even us, like, I invite criticism on my videos. It's not a problem, you know?
We get it whether we like it or not.
Yeah, that's true. It's yeah. And the other thing is, normally it's, like, personal. It's not criticism.
Yeah.
It's like,
your butt stinks.
You look like a lesbian or, like whatever. Like, that's not criticism. That's just ad hominem.
It's just a fact.
Yeah, just a fact. I'm just a lesbian. Interesting though.
I just realized looking at my model next to your models that they went to the same cloak store.
They did.
All bought the cloaks at Costco or some shit.
Tesseract and Tesseract glow green.
Yeah, they just freaking love this. But I mean, the other thing too is like the takeaway as well is if you don't want to look at it from that lens, from when I do videos like this, at the end of the day, it's still a video that's trying to show you to paint how the box art paints, and to, you know, you can still learn from this and not take away the only point of the video is to poop on how GW does stuff. I'm also actually just showing you how to paint the thing.
Yeah.
So there's that too, which is me learning too. This is the first Necron I've ever painted in my life.
Yeah.
I forgot how much fun it is to do mostly metallics over a surface that's got a lot of shapes to it and then washing that and then just doing a little edge highlight. And you're like, God damn it, this looks good really easily.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Necron players don't know how good they got it. Well, I'm sure they do.
coming from people that have a lot of skeletons.
Hey, man, you can make skeletons pretty complicated. Yeah, I know. I'm very good at making things complicated.
Yeah, that's true. That is so true. yeah, but in the after party, because I want to just spruce the after party. I don't know if spruce is the right word.
It's the word now, man.
It is. I'm going to talking about my experience with working with glazing and creating shadows with this, with inks, and good, bad, and ugly, because sometimes you try something new and it doesn't work great, but you're stubborn and you just keep doing it, and that's going to be the moral of the story. All right, ladies and gentlemen, as we are far into this episode, far further than we had ever expected to be, we're actually not going to have a main topic today, which is okay, because we just talked for a buttload of time, and we didn't have anything that really spoke to us in our pants. So we're gonna spend some time digging into the news, because there's some things here that I think are a little bit interesting, and we're going to finish up today's episode talking about that. The first thing that I want to bring up here is the very first topic that writer Goblin James said here, and that Legion Imperialis was released by Games Workshop, and this is tiny Space Marines.
Tiny baby.
Was this 10 millimeter? I think it's 10, like 10 or 15. Yeah. So they're super, super tiny. And then my first question to you, Scott, is why?
Well, they've been doing a lot of their specialist games, redoing them and giving them a shot. Like the flying game, I forget the name of it.
I like it better when we just make up our own names for their flop games.
Yeah, they've been trying it a lot. Like we see Necromunda, all this stuff keeps coming back, you know? When's Mordheim coming back, you know?
Abandoned Spaceship game.
That one didn't come back, did it?
Isn't that what Blackstone Fortress is, kind of?
No. Not at all.
Okay. Well.
Blackstone Fortress is like Warhammer Quest. It's a branch of that, but in space.
Sure.
The game you're talking about is...
Space Hulk?
No, that's another board game. I can't remember it. I'll look it up, but you keep going. Okay. You said why.
Tiny spaceship game, now tiny space marine game.
Yeah, we like tiny things.
Now we're going to do... I mean, dude, if they did bring back Mordheim.
Mordheim, dude.
Dude, we're going to play some Mordhams.
I love my ham morted up, dude.
Yeah. Are you more of a Black Forest Mordham, or are you like a sweet honey Mordham?
Battlefleet Gothic. That's the one with the tiny spaceships.
Yeah, no, that's not what I was looking for. I was looking for on an abandoned ship.
Okay.
Abandoned spaceship. So, I don't like. They bring these games out, and then they're like a hotness for 3 months. And they just die.
Do they die? Well, here's what the news says. The Horus Heresy Starter Box, the Legion Astartes, and Solar Auxilia Army Boxes are already sold out in multiple countries.
That's just because they're the Nintendo of our hobby. Like, they just underproduce specifically.
Okay, right, okay. So this is more a manufactured...
Shortage, 100%.
Okay.
100% manufactured shortage. I'm not saying... They couldn't crank it all the way up and they would still be low stock, or they would still possibly sell out. But you are creating hype around your game, exclusivity around your game, that you have to buy it right away. Because if you waited to determine if there's people in your area that play it or if the game's any good, it's too late. So this way the game doesn't have to be any good to sell them all.
Okay.
That's my theory.
Okay. And are you getting some kind of impression that this game is not popular? There was a lot of videos made about it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Sure. I don't know. I mean, maybe it is. I don't understand why it's in fucking 30K. Why isn't it in 40K universe?
Well, okay, I'm not saying that the videos created are an implication that the game is popular. That's not what I think. They all came from people that I know specifically are on the GW content creator program. And so they got the shit early, and they wanted to make a video about the product because it was getting released and there's hype. So that doesn't imply anything about how popular the game actually is. So I have no idea if it's popular. I thought that maybe you saw something or heard something, and it was like, what's the fucking point of this?
I did a little litmus test with my local group. So we have a Discord for our local 40K, 30K Age of Sigmar people in my area, which is a fairly small city, but we have like 70-ish people in there. And I asked that group, is anyone excited for this? Is anyone pre-ordering it? Is people looking to start up a thing with it? And it's crickets. And there's people that play there are other auxiliary games too. There's people in there that we have a Necromunda group that's part of that same group. There's Kill Team that's in there. There's Warcry. There's all these things that are being played. And I was just like, yeah, just maybe it's just my area. They just don't care. The other thing I had to say about this, I don't know if you watched the Richard Gray video about the Legion Imperialis.
I have not.
He did a whole video on how to fix the models. Because, like, the Space Marines with their guns, the front half of their gun is sculpted, and then it's just flat straight to their chest.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So the sculpting is just, like, sucked in, like old.
It's like shitty board game models.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where that's like they just were kind of in a two-dimensional path, and then anything that hits that line, they just run the line until it hits another thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So things like the guns and stuff are all whatever. So you're like going in with an X-Acto and like carving out of the plastic.
They want less undercuts, less parts, all that stuff, making manufacturing easier, but kind of making them all like goofy.
For me, from a painting perspective, I'm just like, they sent me the box. I opened the box, and I was like,
wow.
I don't want to paint these.
Those are tiny.
Those little men's.
No.
It's just me personally. I mean, I think the one good thing about them doing it in the 30K universe is then they can have like the Warlord Titans and all the big fucking Titans.
That's a huge benefit. You're totally right.
Yeah, you can get the big stuff, but it's little big stuff.
Little big stuff. I think the other thing is that they paint up so quickly. I painted that one vampire from Nicholas Gareth.
Mm-hmm.
Gareth Nichols? I always fuck it up. Is it Gareth Nicholas?
Yeah,
or
Gareth Nichols.
Okay, Gareth Nichols. And it painted up so fast, and I was like doing NMM and other bullshit on it that no one would ever do. I would never do that in a real army of this stuff. And so it painted so fast. And so you could, in theory, paint up a whole army really quickly, and then if you had even more time, paint a gigantic army, and that would look super fucking epic on the table. So I think that's probably the coolest part about small-scale stuff, is that the barrier to entry for large armies is much lower than a normal size.
Yeah. I mean, that's because anything you do is just one brushstroke, so it just feels good.
Pretty much, yeah.
Don't screw up that one brushstroke, because that's all you got space for, bud.
I remember when I painted that vampire, I was like, fuck, I want a whole undead army of tiny dudes. I mean, even tinier dudes.
I want this vampire to be the giant of the army. I want them smaller.
Yeah.
I want them all to be the size of a grain of rice.
Dude.
That's what I want.
Free hand on a grain of rice?
Yeah. So
there's a fucking video idea.
That's a Legion Imperialis. Okay. GW Armies on Parade has finished for the year, and winners have been posted in a Warhammer community, and they have like the winners of each of these. Mm-hmm. I haven't looked at these yet.
I did a little peeking. They look very fucking cool, but the resolution of the photo is shit, and so you can't really see anything when you really kind of want to get down to the nitty gritty. At least on my phone, I can't really see anything.
No, I can't either.
But they look really cool, like all together.
Yeah, you have to if you have to like zoom way in, because you have to do a big picture to get the whole army in one shot. I get it, but.
Yeah, and also, I mean, third place, Josh Leek with them SBGs. I love some Soul Black Gravelords. And he's got a big army. What does he got? He's got five.
He got gold in AOS with that.
Oh, I thought it was in order, gold, silver, bronze, like overall. Okay, no. You got gold in AOS. My apologies. 20 skellies. He's got a lot of Cursed City painted up. It's hard to tell, yeah, but.
I mean, it looks good at a distance for sure.
I love those teal blades on the
Graveguard.
Graveguard, thank you. I forgot their names. They look so nice far away. I love it. I love seeing it. It's a big army, dude. It's way bigger than mine.
Well, the same amount of points.
it definitely isn't. Maybe it is because the zombies aren't that expensive, are they?
Zombies are cheap. Those
a ton of characters, though. He painted the whole Cursed City box. He painted Kato. He painted the new vampire. He painted the rat boy. Remember the rat boy's name.
He doesn't. If you notice, though, in this army list, there's no big point suck with like a Manfred or a Neferata.
Or both.
Yeah, he's got
a zombie dragon and Neferata.
Yeah, he's got one Terrorgeist, and everything else are little heroes. So he's saving a lot of points for there.
Mm hmm. Mm hmm. But they all of them look very fucking cool.
Yes. So that is. Why are there only three boner boys on horses? Those come in units of fives.
What? I thought there was five. It was a unit of five. Where's the three-man unit?
It's top left. Is there five there that I just don't see, and they're in two rows?
There's five dudes.
And there's the heat hero dude in the middle.
Yeah.
God, I can't.
Brother, what is wrong?
This picture resolution.
It's France.
Yeah, this is. I always like to see these, like when we go to Adepticon and stuff, and you see, like, you know, Big Dick slinging their sweet ass painted armies on parade.
Dude, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot to tell you about this, but I'm judging armies on parade at Adepticon.
Are you serious?
Yeah, dude. Me, Uncle Adam, and Eric from Eric's Hobby Workshop are all the judges for Armies on Parade at Adepticon. I was like, so every Friday, is it Saturday or Friday? I think it's Saturday. Every Saturday, we always walk by, and it's always so hype, and I love it. I love looking at them. And I was like, this would be so much fun to judge this. I really don't know how to judge stuff like this
big. How much time is going to take, though?
I don't know.
That takes up that whole long hallway on both sides of it.
Yeah, but I read the rubric.
You can make some quick decisions pretty fast, though.
Yeah, you can probably suss out top five, top six, maybe.
Pretty quickly.
But yeah, I'm excited to do that with Eric and Adam.
You need to not be the guy that just gets like caught in the lights of like their big fancy over the top contraption of their board.
I think that's why I'm there.
Yeah,
I think Eric is the board guy, right?
Okay.
I'm the painting guy, maybe, and Adam is just the fucking guy.
He's the common man.
Yeah, he's the common man.
You know,
it's there.
He's the everybody
spreading the good word.
Well, you know, he has a perspective of that's not. He's not too, you know, up to his neck in any one of those where he over-exaggerates or over-emphasizes something.
Exactly. Places too much value in any one thing.
Yeah, dude. He's the dude that stands in the center of the teeter-totter.
Yeah.
So no matter which way it goes, he's just always in the same spot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
I believe it.
That's pretty cool. I'm just going to come and heckle you while you do it.
Get out.
And I'll be like, oh, all right, I'm going to go do something else now. You're going to still be here for four more hours. Sucka!
I really hope it doesn't take.
Oh fuck! Yes, it will.
4 hours.
Oh yes, it will.
Okay, we'll see. I want to
over under on that. We'll bet something. We'll bet tendies on how long it's going to take you.
I am betting 3 hours.
Okay, so if it goes 3 hours and 1 minute, I owe you Popeye's chicken dinner.
This is not fair. Okay, I'm going to guess 5 hours.
No, I'm not taking that bet.
All right, fine. 3 hours.
3 hours seems like a reasonable thing.
Yeah,
I think you can do it in under 3 hours, but I also think you won't.
We'll see. I have no idea. I think it's gonna be a lot of fun.
I need to recruit a goody peepee to be on top of you and check like with a stopwatch while following you around.
Yeah, yeah. I'm gonna like just sneak into it and like not tell you that I left.
Yeah, he's like, oh, he's done. Well, the sheets are all empty. We'll be right around the corner playing Commander Magic that whole time.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be having fun.
Did we talk about the Flesh Eater courts on the podcast?
No, we didn't.
Okay. This is very new. Not new. The idea of releasing this many models for an army is like an old thing. Like when I got into Wood Elves, I remember they had a bunch of old shitty models that I know Emil loves a lot. I do not like the old Wood Elf models. And then they got redone. And back in the day when GW used to redo an army, it was so hype because they would like redo like everything in the army because like it all kind of sucked or was very old school looking. And so you get an army with a new book, fucking 10 new boxes, like 5 new blisters. And it was like, it was so hype. And so this reminds me of like an old school army release. Mm. Like we have the numbers here. 25 completely new plastic miniatures, new battle tome, 27 scrolls, 30 tokens, 33 enhancement cards, whatever the fuck that is, all at the same time.
That's okay. That's just the inclusion in the new box.
Oh, that's just the army box?
Yes. Now, when they say it's 27 new models, that's individual models. That's not new units
okay.
in the army.
Wait, what? There's 25 new... So, like, in a unit of, like, 10, like, ghouls, or I forget what they're called.
Yeah, they're ghouls.
Ghouls. Are they counting 10 of, like, the slightly remodeled ghouls as all new ghouls?
They are.
Okay.
So, in that number of 25 new models of the unit of the 10 new ghouls, they are counting those as 10 new models.
And they're pretty new. They're pretty different.
Those are not... But this is slightly different than you're talking about, like, with the old... updates on armies. Those aren't new ghouls as in they're replacing the old ghouls. Those are like the graveguard ghouls for FEC.
Oh.
Old chafe ghouls are still in the book. They're still in the army. These are the elite ones.
Yes.
And so on the, but they look a lot like them, but just nicer.
Okay.
But in the army, I believe it's roughly five-ish entirely new heroes in roughly the same amount of new units.
Yeah, because there are more. There's more than just in this box.
Yes, there are more.
Damn, son.
And they're, they made this army from one that was very bare bones in the amount of options, the amount of units in it. Because it's always been that thing with FEC. Like, FEC is an example of this. The Fire Dwarves. Why can I not think of their names? Fire Slayers.
Yeah.
They were another example of armies that just did not have very many units. Like, they just didn't have very many options.
And they're all very aesthetically similar.
Yes.
In both those factions.
Yes. And so here, they're doing a bunch of new things. And Usharan.
Oh, my God, bro. Okay. My buddy sent me a picture of that model, and I was like, I wonder if that's Usharan. And then it fucking was, and then I got the biggest nerd boner ever, dude. I don't care about Usharan so much, and Strigoi, and like all these like dudes, but if we're getting a AOSified Usharan, does that mean we're getting an Abrash? Does that mean we're getting a Sauron? We already have Neferata.
Sauron is Lord of the Rings.
Oh, yeah. No, sorry. It's W apostrophe Sauron. The W sign. I'm not even kidding.
Wisseron.
Yeah. I remember reading his book, and the entire time I was pronouncing it like Wisseron. And then I heard it, and I was like, oh, I'm a fucking idiot. Of course you don't pronounce the W. Yeah, just the implication of getting an Usharan means maybe, and I care about is Abrash. Maybe we're going to get an Abrash. That would be so fucking sick. But I like these models. Some of them are pretty good. The executioner guy, he's not in the box with like the cowl. Like,
yeah,
that guy's cool. Fucking. He's dirty looking.
Yeah, he's sweet. I like that they're finally, from a model perspective, they're leaning into a delusional court theme.
They're
modeling the fact that they think that they're royalty, even though they're just like eating each other's livers and shit.
Yes.
And so you can see that in Usharan. You see that in the other new heroes, that there's like the dude with the poofy wig, but it's made out of a
intestinal tract.
Intestines.
Yeah.
There's the new the guy that's like the chaplain or like the holy dude.
Yeah.
But he certainly is not all right in the head.
No. It's cool. Yeah. It's very cool.
Yeah.
So I kind of want to play him, honestly.
They look like they're not a lot of. I'm sure there's some strategy to them, but they're also just kind of like the orcs where it's like, we're just getting in there and fucking with it. And they can fly around.
Okay.
They can fly around. They can do some awesome shit. So,
okay.
Yeah, I think that was cool. That was an exciting announcement that I did not see coming.
No. Yeah.
That they are pretty sweet. And it's like, oh, man, what other things? I want them to do Dark Elves so bad. Because I'm thinking about like what would be my next army I'd play.
Shadowy, draconic Dark Elves,
I'm
dude.
Just going to do emo Elves, 100%. Dude. They're all wearing black eyeliner.
Oh, yeah, dude. I just watched 300 last night, and, man, there's so much fucking black eyeliner in that movie.
First time you watch that movie, you, like, don't really realize it. At least I didn't.
Yeah.
And then you're just kind of like, yo, what's up with that?
They're Greek boys. Apparently they got dark eyes.
What are all these oiled up Greek boys?
You really forget about how much fighting is actually in that movie. You kind of think it's the entirety of the movie, but it is not.
Not very much, actually.
Yeah, it's like there's a solid 30 minutes of like really good action choreography and like fighting. Mm.
That would actually...
It's just like kind of a little uncomfortable at times, or just kind of bad movie a little bit. But that 30 minutes of fighting is so fucking epic that nothing else matters.
Yeah, it's worth it. Worth.
Yeah, it's so worth it. 100%. I love that movie.
It's so funny, too, because now whenever I think of that movie, since they re-released the AOS Slaanesh, dudes, there's a dude that looks just like the big bad guy.
It isn't just one dude. The entirety of Xerxes' like higher officials and his court is all like that.
Slaanesh.
They got the nose piercings, the jewelry, the weird, like some people have arms that are cut off and replaced with like axes.
Yeah. They totally copy-pasted that movie.
A little bit. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if Zack Snyder copy-pasted it from something else, but sure. It looks very derivative.
And this is not a dig on GW for doing that, because it's a great, it's fucking cool.
It's cool, yeah.
But there is a specific dude, and he's a bigger dude, and I think he's in the from the Slaanesh line. I think he's supposed to have like two little harpy ladies like flying off, acrobats jumping off him. But just that guy, he looks exactly like Xerxes.
Yeah,
even has, I think he still even has like the chain that runs from his nose to his ear.
Yeah.
So that would be awesome to do, and you could never do it for Golden Demon because it would be out of world. But having some kind of a diorama with like him versus 300 guys, you know, there's like a couple of dudes like mid jumpy, speary pose.
Yeah.
They love that pose in that movie.
They do.
He's fucking jumping off of the other dude's shields. Dude, and he's like,
that's the iconic moment. That's when you know that gods can bleed, you know? Yes. That's huge.
I mean, but you could have just that moment in a duel in Golden Demon,
yeah,
of like that dude, he's just like striding forward, like he gives zero fucks, and the other dude's like just jumping out at him, and he's like, oh, you about to get stabbed.
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
Shank him.
I watched that movie, and then we immediately watched Barbie after it, and I did not realize how just different of an experience that was.
You didn't think that would be
I didn't
different?
Think about it, but it's like almost the polar opposite ends of like what the story is about, what the theming is. Like this one is clearly for men. Like it's clearly a boy thing. It's tons of testosterone. Everyone's talking about sons and fathers and honor and bloodshed. It is so fucking macho. And this other one is just the complete opposite. It is totally different. And it was just cool to see like those two totally different takes.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He's like, what do your soldiers do? Well, he's a farmer. He's a, you know, he's a blacksmith. Whatever. You know, what about us?
And they just say fucking oorah. That's all
yeah,
they say.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, Spartans! And they're like, oh! That's all they say. Yeah. It's like, okay, you get it, right?
Yeah. We are warriors. That is what we do for a job.
Yeah. The whole movie is so fucking epic.
That's not the most testosterone-filled, this is made for men scene. I don't know what is.
I was watching it with Amber and another friend's wife, and they had none of them had seen it ever. And it was just like, man. So I was watching it. Whenever I have that experience, I'm always thinking about what the other person is feeling. It's like, what are you thinking about, like, what they're saying right now? It's like, it's ridiculous. He, like, boots him down a hole saying, dude, this is Sparta. I was like, this is so fucking me. I love this so much. But, like, Amber, absolutely not.
Dude, I just want one time in my life to, like, find a giant well somewhere, and I'm just going to kick something down it.
Yeah, dude, screaming that.
I'm just going to front kick a goat down the well.
Not a goat.
This is Sparta. Psh.
It's gone, dude.
I would just feel like this is the pinnacle of my life. I'd never feel more alive.
Yeah, probably.
You know,
I mean, I
just want to do it.
I feel the same way.
I want to do it. Yeah.
Anyways, that movie rocks. You should watch it again.
Okay. All right. I own it on Blu-ray because it's one of those ones you gotta like watch in that most high fidelity,
absolutely,
version.
Dude.
Oh yeah,
absolutely. But yeah, there's a lot of not killing in that movie, which I could do without. I don't need it.
I mean, I dig, like, as I'm a big like lover of like the Greek mythology and all the kind of the yeah, fairy tales of those kinds of a part of the world, and it's like it feels like that
it
and
does.
It's telling you the story of you know, almost like a biblical story,
yeah,
of like this is something that's been passed down, and this was the story of the 300, and in that you have to flesh it out to be something more than just their final stand.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. It is. It's very cool. Also, the way they do it, like with the Oracle of Delphi, and like they have all these weird, creepy men who are like basically half corpse, half human, and they're like licking her, and she's like clearly like a prisoner. It's all very weird and like lots of mysticism going on. Mm.
There's a lot of those kind of scenes that feel a lot like Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, when like the dude that like he's got his concubines up there, and he's got the, like them producing milk for him so he can drink milk. There's just like these very eerie, like icky feeling,
yeah,
locations and people.
Yeah.
And it's just like
they feel evil. Actually,
yes.
One thing I had never known, and I found out for the first time watching the movie this time, is that there's like a 3-second shot when like the big hunchback guy goes to meet with Xerxes and ultimately betrays Leonidas.
Yeah.
The first 3 seconds of that scene, there's a goat head man. There's like just a straight up human with a goat head. A real goat head, not like a mask. Like he is a goat man. Oh. And like this, there's some dark shit in this movie, you know?
Yeah, that's how the Beastmen were formed.
Yeah, dude, like, yeah. So you're totally right with Slaanesh being similar to Xerxes and all of this. There's so much shit that looks just like that. I didn't even think about that.
Moral of the story is all of this would have been fine if she would have just chucked that baby off the cliff like she was supposed to.
Yeah, honestly, or if Leonidas wasn't such a great guy and just booted that bitch right off that path, you know? Then they would have killed every single person in that army, I have no doubt.
Dude, what I've learned in life is never trust a hunchback.
yeah, dude. Never. Wait. Where other places have you learned that lesson?
I mean, Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Wait, what does he do? That's like untrustworthy.
I don't know. Rings a bell? He's not supposed to.
I can't even remember the plot of that movie.
I don't either.
Hunchback man is sad.
I mean, I'm probably not supposed to call it Notre Dame. I'm supposed to call it Notre Dame.
Notre Dame.
So I beat you to your half-written sentence in the comments.
Yeah. All right.
This has been movie time. I'm just trying to think if I'd watched any good movies lately, and I don't think I've watched. I feel like I've watched a couple of movies, but I can't remember what they were.
I'm feeling the end of the year is coming, and so I'm really trying to pad my stats right now in terms of how many movies I've seen. I'm definitely over like 150 at this point, but I need more.
I want to see Oppenheimer.
I haven't seen that one yet.
I want to see Napoleon.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, those are two big ones on my list. I haven't seen Barbie either. My daughter has seen it twice. My wife has seen it once.
Okay, okay.
And they really like it, and they would watch it again. So
I mean, there's nothing wrong with not wanting to watch it. Like you kind of can see what the movie is about. I think it's worthwhile to watch. I really enjoyed it. But, like, also watching movies is about, for a lot of people, about having fun and not necessarily challenging something.
Sure.
You know?
If you think that you'll enjoy it. And some part of that's the surprise or the excitement of changing your expectations of what you thought it was,
yeah,
or going into it and it being changed, and sometimes that is the excitement of the ride is worth it there. And sometimes it doesn't live up to it, or it's different in a way that you don't like, and that's just part of the fun of it. So it's going to cost you 2 hours of your life.
Yeah,
if they're all amazing, then none of them are amazing, right?
That's
isn't that kind of how it works.
You need the bad ones to make the good ones look better.
Exactly.
But there's so much deadpan humor in that movie, and I fucking love that, where it's like, I'm going to go do this incredibly obvious thing. And it's like the delivery of that thing is the joke, not necessarily what they're doing. So I thought it was hilarious. And it has the ending, I think, is super poignant for all people, not just like females. So I thought it had a pretty good message at the end.
Is it like be good to people?
No, it's a question of like purpose.
Oh, you're supposed to throw them off the cliff when they're babies?
Yeah, that's exactly what it was about.
Okay.
Actually, the two movies really weren't so different.
They really, at the end, they both just come together.
I kind of feel like this is not a miniature painting podcast. Especially this episode is very off the rails.
What are you talking about? This is still on the Flesh Eater course topic.
Right. Yeah, all right, of course, yeah. Middle Air Strategy Battle Game, yeah. Oh, right, the armies of the dead, the warriors, are transparent sculpts. They're like teal.
Oh, they're see-throughs?
Yeah, they're see-through. So, like, they look like ghosty boys now.
Dude, Mage Knight did that, like, 20 years ago.
Yeah, it's not a new thing, but...
You like miniatures, you want to paint them, but you don't actually want to paint them? Here you go.
Here you go. Just do a little white dry brushing, done.
Oh, yeah. It's like, well, the thing that people would originally say about this is like, oh, you could just throw, like, a colored wash on there, and then it would, like, run into the recesses, and then you'd still keep the translucent, but then you'd get some shadows. You'd think that, but then you try it and you see that this kind of material is naturally so very smooth that the washes just go like, shink, and they just leave. They just pool at the bottom of the pot.
At the bottom of the model, yeah.
And anything that is still there is a streaky mess.
I wonder if models need a rotisserie chicken.
Dude!
Your rotisserie thing?
Would that not work? It would work. If you want the washes to be exactly where you want them and have them not run, the key is setting up the speed of the rotisserie.
Yes, the speed is a hard thing to find, but and also how much wash do you put on, right?
Right, yeah.
You got to really, this is
what
the thing.
What if you baste them while they're on the rotisserie?
Maybe. We just discovered a new way to wash models.
Dude, this is the greatest invention of miniature painting.
Does Timu make this? A miniature rotisserie chicken?
It wouldn't be Timu. It would be Micromark. They would make that.
You're definitely right. That's definitely a Micromark thing.
Yeah, it's right. It's in the catalog right next to the tiny, tiny table saw.
Yeah.
It's tiny model rotisserie. And then it comes with like these little forks that you have to like put in the head and the base, and then you set the forks on there, the metal forks, and then it just like starts to slowly spin.
Yeah, they're for Cornish hens. You've got a rotisserie cook a Cornish hen. Awesome. Okay. Okay.
Is there any other news that matters?
I don't know. I'm just trying to like. I feel bad that there's no main topics. I'm trying to pad it out a little bit. The one thing that James has a lot of
2 hours, dude.
Oh fuck. Okay. Last thing. McFarlane made a Terminator. James has some thoughts on it. I want to share his thoughts. Is it just me or the proportions off? I feel like the head should be way bigger for some reason. Maybe it's not in heroic scale, which makes it seem out of proportion. All right. We'll discuss.
Is this like a T-1000 or
this is a. Nope, that's a different thing. Proportion-wise, I actually feel like the head's a little bit too big. If you were talking like just heroic scale versus real scale. Like this guy is like what, 12 feet tall? That makes his head like, I don't fucking know. His helmet is gigantic. Is his head really that big? Are Terminator heads like their actual skin and flesh and blood? Are their heads bigger than a Space Marine's head?
No, I thought they're I think the same.
Right. So
it's like a Space Marine is just bigger. They're all bigger, but I don't think there's like when they give them the baby juice to like make them grow super big.
they have Terminator juice. It's different.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, it's like Ecto Cooler.
It's got more roids in it.
Yes.
So in saying that, a Terminator armor is larger than a normal Space Marine, and so you would think if they had a bigger model at the same size head and also the same size helmet, that they would be even smaller than a Space Marine.
I like how you're trying to logic your way through this.
Well, I'm just like, if I'm going to tell James that he's wrong, I have to like actually like back it up, you know? James, you're wrong. It should be smaller, actually.
I don't think it should be smaller. I think it's just right.
I think it's fine.
Yeah. From the perspective, I get where James is coming from here. From the perspective that it's the big head because he's a big dude, and then you put that helmet on top of it to still have all the whatever's inside the helmet. The helmet would be bigger than that, I think. Mm. His head is the right size. It looks proportioned to be if that's the size of his head, but not a helmet on top of a head that big. But I think just aesthetically looking at it, I don't think it doesn't immediately jump off to me as like, oh, this is obviously out of scale.
Yeah, yeah, same.
But I get like what he's saying, and I tend to agree. Because if you look at the scale of Terminators or even like the new Primaris-sized Terminators that they recently released, their helmets are a lot bigger in scale to this one.
I think the armor especially is chunkier looking, which makes, and if yeah. the armor is thinner on the action figure, then the helmet would look larger.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true, yeah.
Or whatever, smaller.
I'm glad that we dealt through the troubled issues of our day.
Yeah.
In this. We got to the bottom of this.
We did. We figured it out.
Yeah. The key is
McFarlane, my email's in the description. Let me know.
The key is they use the blue Gatorade juice for the Terminators instead of the red.
They got bigger heads.
They got bigger. That's how you get bigger heads. Yeah. Blue Gatorade juice.
Yeah, dude. Whatever.
Is it like a frost icy or breeze or
yeah, something like
frost one is the white one.
Yeah.
I don't remember. Just blue.
Yeah, we call it just blue.
Just blue.
Welcome to the end of the podcast. Thank you so much for sticking around all the way to the end. We appreciate your devotion to listening to us yammer on in our uneducated, unadult ways.
True goody peepees here. And those of you that also have apparently a terrible education growing up.
Yeah.
You made it.
Yeah.
You made it.
None of us are mature or adults. None of us. If you want to support the podcast, there are many ways that you can do that. You can support us on Patreon. That's the way we like the most. You can get access to an extended portion of the podcast. This one was actually quite long.
It was.
Yeah, we had a lot of chatting. We talk about new stuff we've tried out and failed at or succeeded at. We talk about models that we love from other hobbyists in our sphere that we were inspired by. And we also talk about We don't talk about it. We give feedback to one of our patrons as well. And so you could be that patron. And also, as being a patron, you're allowed to give us topics for discussion that we often grab from and then give you credit when we do that. So that's Patreon. You can also watch our YouTube videos without uBlock Origin on. You can whitelist our channels. So we play an ad every 30 minutes, and that gets a little kickback as well. You can also buy things on Teespring. We have lots of merch, 3 different merch designs, cups, joggers, sweaters, t-shirts, the whole 9 yards. And then beyond that, if you don't have any money to spend, that's totally fine. Just giving us a review wherever you listen to podcasts, talking about our podcast to your friends, sharing the good word, you know, spread that good word. All those things help a lot.
Yeah. Well, thanks for hanging out with this one. We're going to have another one 2 weeks from the launch of this one. Until then. We'll catch you on the
Flippity Flop.